Hello, welcome back to another episode of All Bases Covered,
the podcast helping you navigate the beauty industry and cut through the bullshit.
Hello, Lisa.
Hello, Alex.
Hi, Josh. Today's another pre-recorded episode. I'm currently, I don't know where I'll be. It might be in Port Douglas right now.
Noosa.
Yeah, or maybe Noosa. Must be nice. Ooh. And so, yeah, we have a great pre-record and it's a guest episode.
Yes, with Josh Collier, who is here. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
So, Josh may be a sweet angel baby face, but in fact, he is a veteran in the beauty industry. He has worked with retailers from all over the world, handling sales, education, distribution, retail marketing, and more. He's actually a self-trained makeup artist and ex-beauty YouTuber, which we must find out more about later. He's previously worked for indie beauty brands such as Hourglass, Sunday Riley, Kaya Weiss, and his current role at Kosas has him heading up the international sales where he works with retailers like Mecca, Cult Beauty, Sephora, Niche Beauty, and more. Josh is proudly from Delaware, but is also officially a New Yorker, which he left to become one of the 23 people living in the hustle and bustle of Canberra. So my first question, and the most important one of the whole episode, why Canberra?
Oh my God, loaded question. Not really. So I don't know. I'd visited many cities in Australia and that was the one that I was just like, this feels like home. No, not at all. Not at all. Would have not been my first pick, my second pick, or probably my third pick.
So I had been
to Canberra one time prior to making the choice of living here for 3 days. And in those 3 days, you do kind of all the touristy Everything. Things. You go to the Mint, you go to the War Memorial, and you're like, okay. And I had the luxury that I'd actually lived in Washington, D.C. for a few years. So I kind of knew what a political city was, where I was like, oh yeah, like the sidewalk rolls up at 8 p.m. and it's all people who are political or adjacent in their career. But I will say D.C. is much livelier than Canberra. It's definitely a much bigger city still. And there's a lot of people who live there who don't work in government, but my partner is actually from Hobart, born and raised.
Oh!
So we met in New York while we were both living there. He moved there actually 3 months before I did from Hobart to work at the consulate in New York. And I moved there while I was working for Hourglass to manage their business at Sephora in New York. And
amazing.
Yeah, a few months into us being there, we met. And then we were together for 6 years before we made the decision. He had an opportunity to move to Canberra. And I said, let's throw caution to the wind. Life's short. I'm going to move to Canberra at 31 and
life's short.
Take a chance.
Let's end it sooner.
Yeah. And little did I know I was going to throw caution to the wind. And we made the decision to move November 2019.
Oh,
and yeah. Chris actually left in January. I was due to leave in April. The world ended. And I did end up getting here finally in June after many canceled flights. But I got here. I did my 2 weeks hotel quarantine in Melbourne, which is an experience. And I'm here. I've been here almost 2 years now. I'm a homeowner. So I am locked and loaded, a permanent resident of Australia.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Now, is your partner a like public servant?
He works for foreign affairs.
Okay.
I mean, truly.
He totally
like
works
I said,
for ASIO and Josh just can't say anything. And we're speaking to the partner of a spy.
No, I did ask him though, in his previous role at the consulate, I'm like, there are things you can't tell me. Right. And he's like, of course not. You're not a citizen of the country. And I'm like, so you are kind of a spy, right?
That's so cool.
That's like my, no one knows. This is like my biggest dream to be a spy, but I have too big a blabbermouth. And
yeah, you would absolutely suck at that. You want to be Alias, don't you?
I do. Yeah. Well, that's a good story. Yes. I'm glad that you told us that because it's been one thing that we've been sliding into your DMs about like on and off being like, why Canberra? And you're like, one day when you get me on the pod, we'll talk about it. So
it's a very nice change from 16 million people to 400,000. Yeah. And then with that comes things like real estate's a bit more affordable. I couldn't afford that million-dollar studio apartment in the outskirts of Queens, where now I'm living smack dab in the center of Canberra in a two-bedroom unit for a third the price.
That's the best.
That is good. That
and
is
also,
a perk.
You're also, like, you can literally just pop to Melbourne or Sydney. Like, you are in a good spot.
Yeah, very central. I mean, everything except Perth is an hour away.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Pop to Melbourne or Sydney when we're not in a stage 3 lockdown. Yes. But yeah.
Yes, which is not very often over the last 2 years.
The odds are against you. One thing that I wanted to ask as well, when I, you know, knew about your history, I guess, before I knew that YouTube had sort of popped into the – the backlog there, I thought, I was like, oh, Josh has such an impressive resume, and there must be a reason, I guess, that beauty came into your life and you decided that you wanted to pursue that as a career, because it's very, I think, rare that someone would fall into beauty and do just as much as you have, like, on a whim. It just doesn't happen. And then when we found out that you had a YouTube channel, we now need to rewind and talk about that, please, momentarily. Tell me all about it.
Yeah, so it's funny because I think, like most people in beauty, there are people who are like born and bred, who fresh out of high school or college are like, I am dying to be a makeup artist or, you know, a hairstylist or whatever. I actually went to university for statistics. I was like, I'm dying to work for the Census Bureau. I could look at, you know, formulas, equations, and live in Excel for hours.
Yeah,
and I loved it. And like, I love data. But life's hard and you get thrown some curveballs. And I ended up working freelance in beauty kind of on a whim. And that's really where I found the love and passion for it. And that was while I was in Delaware. I had the chance to move to DC and do some extra things, which is only about an hour and a half away. So it wasn't like I moved across the country. I was still, you know, relatively close to family.
Yeah.
And, you know, while I was there, I did some freelance work for some brands in department stores, Sephora and Ulta, and really kind of started to feel out beauty. And I kind of learned beauty by watching YouTube to an extent. You know, when you think back to like 2009 and 2010, you know, the people who were big on the internet, you know, Makeup Geek back when she was just Marlena, or Emily Noel 83, or Pixie Wu, like all of those people were people I watched, like definitely Michelle Phan. So while doing some work about a year into working freelance, I was like, I want to start a channel because I feel like I could talk about makeup all day. Like back in the era of like Makeup Alley, where you read reviews and you chat in the message boards. Like I'm totally dating myself to any Gen Z on here. They're like, what's a message board? Like, it's like Reddit, but really specific. I was like, I could talk about it all day. And I figured it was just an outlet to share what I liked and what was going on. So I started that in 2011. And I actually did it I don't want to say full on, like I wasn't full time. I was doing other work. And during that time, I actually started working with Hourglass on a freelance basis. And that's where I started my career with them for 4.5 years.
Yeah.
And it was just an interesting experience because I went on back when I didn't edit videos. I'd shoot them just one straight shot in like a hallway I had that was like an open space. And it was just a really weird time in YouTube, but I enjoyed it. And, you know, I got to the point where it actually gave me an opportunity I wouldn't have had. And I would say I've outgrown it, which is, you know, why I say ex-YouTuber. You know, I got to the point where it's too much to manage with a full-time career, but I have a lot to thank for it. You know, I got to 33,000 subscribers, which back then was like huge. A big deal.
No one was on YouTube back then. 33,000 was like a good portion of the community. Yeah.
33,000. I was like, I'm in the big leagues. Like, I think I maybe in the 3-year career got PR like 3 or 4 times. This is how way back when it was PR. Now you like post one Instagram photo and they're like, I love what you're doing. Can you send you a package? It's a very different ball game. But at the time, like I said, I was working with Hourglass and I made a video on ambient lighting powder when it came out.
That really,
really talking about what's the purpose of each shade. And that's actually, you know, at the time, you know, most of the people there knew who I was because I was out there kind of grinding and hustling and I really wanted to work full time for the team. And that's actually what got me noticed and had me get a job offer to move to New York. So you know, I think a lot of my career to YouTube, because that was 9 years ago.
That's incredible. That what a great story.
Yeah.
So you started in the, like when you said that you were doing freelance for some of those brands, you were doing it as an artist, not in like education or anything like that at the time.
Fully like on the shop floor, like at an Ulta, like pulling somebody from Urban Decay to the brand I was working for, or standing on a Nordstrom on the hard aisle. So think that your fragrance spritzers at Meijer, but imagine them selling Smashbox. That was me back in 2009, 2010.
That's such a different concept to what we have in Australia, because you often hear about freelance artists working for brands. And so they'll work on a counter, or sometimes, you know, their pro artists will be freelance and they'll do like red carpets or whatever, but they're a freelance artist for NARS or whatever. And that just, it's not a thing here. It's really interesting.
It's a very different sales model in Australia. Mecca really changed the game of beauty retail in both Australia and New Zealand, how they operate, really helping brands navigate these two markets and really owning the business for them without the brands needing to do that. where I would say US, UK, Canadian retailers are very heavily reliant on brands. You know, the people think the hard part of being a brand is getting into a retailer. And I think the hard part is staying in a retailer. Anybody can get their brand bought in, because if you sign a contract with a retailer, a lot of times it'll say, you know, you've got to take your goods back if we can't sell them after 6 months. Yeah. So the retailer doesn't take a lot of, you know, liability or risk bringing you in. But you as a brand get in and you're like, wow, we've made it. I'm like, no, you haven't.
No.
Yeah. You've got to hit those, you know, season sale markers for them to actually consider you worth your space.
That's it. And when you think about like being a brand and existing in a space where you're on your own, I suppose, in a Nordstrom or Ulta or whatever it might be, it's like you're reliant on the audience that you grow as a brand, and it's very siloed. You've got no access to the information of other brands. But being in Mecca, you've got the pull of the Mecca audience, like regardless of if they've ever purchased from Hourglass before, as Smashbox or someone, you can, you know, speak to Mecca and get an email sent out or whatever talking about your brand to an audience that may never have purchased from you before. So you've got that, all of the data at your fingertips, and I guess it puts Mecca in the power seat.
It's also just like a logistical nightmare, because I remember shopping in Space NK in the UK, and if you go into a store, there's like maybe two Space NK employees, and then there might be one or two people from a brand in on that day. And it's like, how the hell do you roster for that? Because instead of having people that you would call in when it's busy or you know your peak times, you have this random consultant from a brand that someone's going to be like, can you help me? It's like when you're shopping for shoes in David Jones and they're like, oh no, they're over there. You're like, can you help me? And they'll be like, oh no, I'm actually from Institute Estederm. So if you want to buy sunscreen, I can absolutely help you. Otherwise, like, no, I can't give you this color match for another brand.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell? It's actually just the worst shopping experience.
Space NK is a tough one because it's such a small environment as well, so you know, you really can't have 20 people rostered in one of those shops. Just, it's like a Cosmetica, it's so small, and you're in there, it's like, imagine having that many people, you'd be over your fire and safety limit before a customer enters.
All right, let's get into the actual structure of the episode, shall we? We always start with a little overview, and we've definitely done that. But on a scale of beauty novice to beauty expert, do you think that you could tell us a little bit, I guess, about where you feel that you sit broadly in the beauty community today?
Oh my goodness. If we were doing like a 1 to 10, where do I fall? You know, this is one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm confident, but am I too confident?
Yeah.
You try to, you try to score yourself like a 7 or like an 8. You're like, those feel like a good, like, I'm pretty good, but I'm not a 10 because those people are cocky. So it's like, how do you score yourself? I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm definitely an expert in some things. You know, I'm going to be 33 this year, so I'm not 50 years in the business. So I'm not a professional or a guru in anything. But there are things that, you know, I can definitely navigate my own way through. But there are a lot of things I can't. You know, by no means am I, you know, providing facial services or, you know, formulating products. So there's a lot that I'm not.
I love that, hearing, I guess, your perspective on it, because when you think about someone as, you know, a at-home makeup artist, how confident are you to, you know, read a skincare label and sort out your routine and do your own makeup? You're obviously a 10, you know, on that scale. But I guess when you consider the whole industry around you, there is a lot more to it.
I also feel like that's proof that Australia has rubbed off on you, because if you were truly American, you would have said 10.
Oh, I know plenty of people who would have rated themselves 10, but I know there's things in makeup that I just hate doing. Like, and especially
what
I had
hate?
The, oh my God, winged eyeliner. I think it's just one of those things that not everybody needs a wing.
It's important to know.
Yeah. As a salesperson, you know, I really would spend a lot of time chatting with clients, and I'm like, why do you want this? And a lot of it was like, well, it looks so good on them. I'm like, but we need to look at your face shape, your eye shape. And a lot of it was like, I can do a wing on you. You may hate it. Or you may not like the way it flatters your eye. Or you may never be able to recreate it.
Isn't it the saddest thing ever?
Why should I sell you an eyeliner to do that with?
But
you're never going to do it again.
You've done someone's full face application, and then they drop on you that they want to try a winged eyeliner that day for that event. And then you're like, oh, sweet. Honey.
And they're like 78 years old with hooded, downturned eyes and like a scarf from their eyebrow to the side of their temple. And you're like, perfect.
Now is the time.
I got very good at the old like mid-tone brown shadow, tracing out and sketching the shape and like, okay, it's good. Now grab the black liquid liner or gel liner. And then also would give them the view of like, you can kind of see like the light wing. I can get rid of this really easy. Yes. I cannot get rid of black gel liner really easy. So do you like the way this looks?
Yeah, yes, for sure. It's a skill and an art in itself, the conversation around winged liner, that's for sure.
Yeah. What would you say is the category then that gets you most excited about beauty? Is it makeup, like we would assume?
No, skincare. 100% skincare. And I think a lot of my interest in makeup, I think a lot of makeup artists feel this way, when you first get into makeup in your late 20s, and it might be because of a skin issue. You know, growing up, I didn't really have acne or breakouts. In my late 20s or late teens, I started to experience them. That's when I started to play with concealer, powder, foundation. So I've always had a really big interest in complexion makeup, but it really came from the aspect of skin. So even though, you know, I'm a self-trained makeup artist, skincare is what, like, really gets me going. And it's definitely something that, if you can make someone's skin look good, who cares if, like, you've got the best red lip? Like, it honestly doesn't matter.
Absolutely. And also, if their skin looks perfect, then literally all you need to do is a red lip.
Oh, yeah. Or just give them a little fluffy brow and, like, a red stain on their lip. I'm like, you look great.
Yes.
On that note then, can you run us through the perfect beauty routine for you? Is it really grounded in that ritual of skincare?
100%. I think skincare for me is, like, that's my me time. And they're, and to be honest, living in the world of Zoom for the last 2 years, makeup is not my me time. Like, I am not experimenting with new makeup techniques. I'm doing, like, what I can in 10 minutes to get my makeup done, or when I'm on Zoom for 5 hours at 8 a.m. through 1 p.m., my makeup looks undetectably great on Zoom. In real life, like, oh, that concealer did not cover that spot, but that wasn't the purpose. On camera, looks fine. Totally fine on a Zoom lens. Yeah.
I found that going back into the real world post-lockdown, I've spent so little time worrying about blending in the last couple of years, because you're not seeing anything other than the front of my face on 3 pixels.
A Zoom lens is very forgiving.
So forgiving. You go out now and you're like, really have to think, like, did I blend that down my neck? And like, has my contour and bronzer blended into my hairline enough? Or have I like started that 3/4 the way down my cheek? But yes, tell us about your skincare, I suppose, ritual and what that perfect routine looks like for you.
I would say simple is my big thing. I don't like to use 20 products, especially pre-makeup or in the mornings. I'm a cleanse with water. I've adapted that over the last few years in the morning because my skin's more combination oily. I would say it's more combination now that I'm approaching the mid-30s. There's less oil happening, but still some. So cleanse with water. I love like a washcloth moment in the morning. Yeah. Every morning, a warm washcloth just held over my face for 20 or 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Some gentle wiping with that. And I feel like that's sufficient.
Yeah.
Mist essence serums. I love those like watery, lotiony, splashy. Like I want the jiggle and the suppleness in the skin. And I want it from those layers. I don't love the feeling of a cream on my skin in the day. Mm-hmm. And then I'm a huge face oil person. Have been for many, many, many years now. And I think you've got to have a few drops of face oil in those watery layers to like get the occlusives, the emollients, and have those perfect like balance. And then SPF, I think all of us here in Australia are obsessed with ultraviolet. So I'm team clean screen through and through every single day. Doesn't matter.
You're a clean screen lover. Yes. Okay. We've got one of each of us here then.
Yeah, literally. We cover the whole thing. What facial oils are your favorite out of interest?
So I keep it pretty simple. I love just like a pure rosehip oil. So Trilogy is an iconic, like it's an institution, I think, in Australia. Yeah, yeah. So they're certified organic rosehip oils, probably what I buy the most. But I've been getting into just playing with other oils blended. So, you know, finding single oil facial oils and blending them, because I think there's a lot out there. But there's a lot out there with things that can be sensitizing, or a formula is made by a brand and it's really designed by a formulator or a founder who loves that blend. And you know, whether that's fragrant oils or anything. And it just isn't going to, I think, suit the general public.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know, like there's no real science to oils. It's just keep the essential oils less than 1% and everything else can make up the full body. Find out what's got the right fatty acid blend for your skin play with it. So those drier oils like a jojoba, a watermelon, rosehip, you know, really good oils. So, but rosehip I think is like, it's what I tell everybody to get to if they're first trying, because it doesn't feel thick. It's not like an olive or, you know, anything that's too rich.
Yeah. You should try the Liberty Bell. I know you just said you liked cocktail your own, but you should try the Liberty Bell
Godsend
oil, because it's weird. It's like very oily, but then it kind of dries down. I feel like it would be nice in your like slippy, wet, lightweight routine. I think you'd like it.
I need to look it up. I've been on their website probably 5 times.
Yeah. Yep. And then you're
just
like,
from your podcast. Yes. Every time it's mentioned, I'm like clicking through while listening, and I'm like, oh, what was I doing? And I'm like, let me go back to that. And then maybe a week later, the next episode, I'll go back to it again.
Yeah, bite the bullet one day. It's just annoying because you get on, you're like, oh, everything's $200 and I want to buy it all. So I'll just buy nothing.
Is it available like locally in Melbourne?
David Jones?
Yes. Yeah. I wonder if they would have it in Canberra.
We would not. We would not, which is probably part of the other reason. I definitely am somebody who browses online, then I'm like, I want to go look at it in person, which
tactile.
Not an easy thing to do in Canberra.
I also feel like an internalized guilt around ordering only one thing online, and that's the exact issue with Liberty Bell, is you get there and then you're like, oh, now I need to add 2 things to my cart and it's $300. Yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to get into a little bit more of the juicier section of the pod. So we want to know what you think is an overhyped beauty product or a product that you will never purchase again and why.
Oh my goodness.
You must have experienced so much.
I've seen so many things that I've just like looked down and shaken my head at. So there's a lot of trends that why does this exist? And working with retailers like on the behind the scenes planning 6 months, a year, 2 years out, you kind of know what the trends are when a brand's like, oh, are you going to be launching like any like holographic products, like anything that's like duochrome? And I'm like, that's going to be spring 2022. Like that's what's happening.
Yeah. Don't tell me it is.
No. Thankfully not. Thank God. I think it was a few years ago when Becca was doing all those like geode highlighters. I was like, this is nuts. Who approved this?
Yeah, so, I will never forget. I was working at like Priceline at the time in social media, and they were launching the holographic, like how Anastasia had the contouring palettes. They had the holographic highlighting palettes aplenty. Every brand had them, and it was just like chunk
of everybody. Everybody was frosted, robotic, metallic, and textured. It was so awful. Dangerous. It was an awful time.
Yeah, it was literally just a milliar city on the top of the cheekbone.
Yes. Yeah. So that would be a huge one. I would say anything over highlighting. And I think we've fully made it out of that period of time, thankfully. But we also have the horrible filtered Instagram photos of 2016 and 2017 to prove we went through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No pores were the way to go.
Yeah.
And it's like, we all have pores, but we don't have to make them look as big as a crater. We don't have to.
That was a hard time to be in retail because everyone wanted to look like an Instagram filter in real life, especially, you know, older women who weren't across the fact that people were filtering their photos and would come in and say, I want to look like this beautiful person. And you're like, it was a hard time for expectation management, I think, as an artist.
100%. It was probably that 3 or 4 year period where, you know, like the rise of Anastasia Beverly Hills was
everyone
really
wanted to look like Norvina.
Yeah. And I was like, that's not achievable in person. Yeah. And I can give you makeup that you can photograph and do some Facetune to, and you can get there. But by no means can you wear that to dinner tonight.
Yes. Yeah. So that's more of a beauty trend, I feel, that you wish would die.
More of a trend. Is there a particular product that you can think of?
Oh, there's definitely stuff. I don't know if I can like dog anybody and not have like bad repercussions head my way. Like, we heard you say this, especially working for a brand, because they're like, we're supposed to work together. I heard you called me out.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. We'll allow it.
You said that glossy brow pencils were the worst. I was talking about that the other day, that Smashbox did a glossy brow product. No one wants a glossy brow.
I remember that. That was a bad time.
It was such a weird oil slick on the eyebrow that didn't have any, like, the product didn't have hold at all.
And two shades.
Yes.
Yeah, it was weird because I freelanced for Smashbox back when brow tech was their big thing. Yes. And I remember after Estee Lauder acquired them, that was when they redid that whole category. And it was like, this is a big swing and a very big miss.
You really hoped this was going to be hot, but
like,
it wasn't.
Like, you were there when I was growing up. I needed you to do this right, and you messed it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And you failed me. You made me pluck my eyebrows off, and now I need to draw them back on. And you're giving me glossy brow, which is going to wipe off in 2 seconds.
Castor seed oil and pigment.
Oh gosh, it was so bad.
Funny. Now, moving on from the bad, I'm sure that you'll be thrilled to talk about the good. What is a beauty product that's changed your life?
Oh my goodness. There's so many. I'm like, who do I nominate for skincare, for makeup? Yes. I would say makeup revealer concealer from Kosas. My ride or die. If I could have like five pieces of makeup, it would probably be two of the five. I would actually probably do two colors of it. I will die on this hill. Most people in the world need two shades of concealer.
Yeah.
So that's definitely one. It's so user-friendly. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what tools you're working with, fingers, sponge, brush, mm-hmm. like it just works. It's great if you've really taken the time to prep the skin. But if you have somebody who's like, I've never exfoliated, like you can still make it look pretty good on the skin.
It doesn't cling. Yeah.
So that would be my one makeup product. And I'd say my product skincare wise, because I've got to talk about skincare. I'm in love with the Youth to the People, the new superfood unity toner, the green one. Because I used to love the kombucha toner, but she is real sticky. So she's definitely on nighttime only. But the unity toner is that more mild 3% AHA, 2% BHA, 1% PHA.
Yeah.
Super gentle for daytime. Like I love it after shaving. I love it every morning. So yeah, that's my skincare pick.
It's funny you say that after shaving, because the first thing that came to my mind, I don't even know why, was I bet you that would be brilliant spritzed on the bikini line. Like those ingredients sound lovely for that. Or ingrowns, the pits maybe even.
It's mandelic acid too for the AHA. So really good for like antibacterial benefits. So it's definitely designed for somebody who's like breakout or ingrown prone, which is I'm like, oh, that's both of me.
That's amazing.
So interesting for you to say a toner as well. I can't imagine that anyone else will say that a toner has changed their life. Can I ask, you a toner splasher or are you a toner like cotton pad applier, or what's your, how do you tone?
It depends on what the toner is. Okay. So if I'm looking for exfoliation from a toner, if it's something with enzymes or acids, it's got to be a cotton applicator of sorts, whether that's reusable or whatever. And you've got to have that gentle like wiping with a little bit of buffing. Like the acids are great, but I like to break up the skin and remove it. I don't want to just break it up and then like leave it there. But if it's something otherwise, like I love a mist, like give me some splashing for some hydration or just like an extra boost of moisture.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Okay. These are the staple questions that we ask each other in every podcast.
Yeah.
And we will now ask you, what is your current beauty fave?
Oh, okay. So this is like hot off the press. We just launched, like literally just launched as per this episode coming out versus when it came out, Revealer Foundation from Kosas. So I'm holding it so Lisa and Alex can see it. Sorry, peeps, if you can't see it. I know you can't.
Please describe it.
Yeah, for so the it is. It's a beautifully frosted glass bottle with the yellow graffiti lid, just like the concealer. It's a pump. SPF 25. Medium, light to medium coverage, so still not full coverage because that's very un-Kosas. Like we don't like masky or heavy. We're all about skin embellishing, both from a makeup look, but also from a skincare standpoint. Yeah. And this to me is like, if I could make a foundation, I'm like, I can't now because Sheena already did it. Like here it is. It's so much treatment. So everything that's in the concealer, like Arnica, Pro Vitamin B5, hyaluronic acid, so all the things you want for skin that is, you know, breakout prone, sensitive, dehydrated. But there's also zinc-based SPF in here. So you get that little extra kind of security blanket in accordance with your regular SPF. Mm-hmm. Please apply your regular SPF underneath it. But there's also so many other things in here. There's squalene in it, you know, artemisia flower. So some really great things, ferulic acid for inflammation. Ooh, so it's...
Yeah, and zinc's quite calming too, typically on a skin as well. Like obviously it's the SPF, but it is quite a calming ingredient. So that sounds like a sensitive gal or guy's dream.
Yeah, but the texture is where I think the big win. I know I just like rambled on about all these ingredients. It performs like a conventional foundation. And for those of you who don't know, if you work for a brand in like the clean or green space, it's you have clean and green beauty and then you have conventional beauty. Yeah. So it works like a foundation from the conventional space that would traditionally have silicone or you know, certain film formers in it, where it goes on, glides over texture versus clinging to it. But at the same time, it has the lightweight feel of like a silicone-free product. So if you really like those like thin tinted moisturizer veil mm-hmm. of color, but you don't feel it, versus a foundation that you're like, I can feel it, but I look good. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You're able to get that from this. And fingers sponge, I actually love the Juno & Co. flocked sponge.
Oh, wow.
And like half a pump is like sufficient for me. So don't need a lot. So me talking about this for 3 years.
Yeah. Well, the Juno gives you so much coverage too. It's like alarming. So that would be like a product saver. This excites me because I know so many people. So the big concealer at Mecca used to be the Bare Minerals Bare Skin Concealer.
Oh, I know.
Then they reformulated it and now it's trash. And so great timing. Kosas was just expanding their color range of the Revealer Concealer at that kind of time too, because I used to love it, but it was all quite yellow and I couldn't really use it. So then boom, Revealer comes out. Everyone that used to buy Bare Minerals, which was the entire Australian population, is now buying Revealer. And the reason people like both of those concealers is because I feel like a lot of Australians like concealer with no foundation, and then they're like, oh, I don't wear foundation, I just wear concealer all over my face.
Yeah
it's like pat on the back, but you're still wearing makeup.
Yes, you've still got coverage, like who gets a medal for not putting foundation on anyway? But now that there's a product that is going to be like the concealer that people are already wearing as a foundation, but they can buy the foundation.
Yes.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, it really is. And that was part of the reason we made it, was most people were using Revealer like, oh, I want like a little dot here, a stripe here. So it was really people putting full coverage on with the concealer. And we were just like, there's got to be a better way to like treat the skin all over your face. Because Revealer was made, you know, specifically, you know, with ingredients for an angry blemish, for your dry under eye who needs some brightening, you know, areas you might have some signs of aging happening. But Revealer Foundation's like, I'm here to treat 360 every square centimeter of your face.
Yes.
Great.
So, and 36 shades, which is huge.
That's good.
So you're getting a lot of shades, a lot of different undertones. I did a lot with shade matching with this to make sure we got every undertone. So I know that concealer, we added the shade range and it was spot on then. But hey, if the Australian consumer can make 5 shades of Bare Minerals concealer work, how they did it, I don't know. They can make 36 shades of Revealer foundation work.
Yes. And then now at least, as you say, everyone needs 2 shades of concealer. I believe so too, because I'm so gray under my eye. Everyone now, I need to send everyone out to buy the pink tone just to use around their eye, and then they can buy their actual more golden tone for their face in their foundation.
Yes.
That's going in my kit. I can already tell I like it. It's already going in my kit. I'm so excited.
Can I ask, because you've said that it's come out, but when do you have a sneaky idea of when it might be hitting the Australian retail stores?
Yeah, you're like, Josh, you said it's come out. I'm on mecca.com.au.
Yeah,
it's
where is there. It?
Where is it? So we're aiming to have it to Mecca in October, potentially September. I won't make promises, but by October it'll be here. So, and that's just those SPF jumps. But hey, they're worth it when you get something that you're not having to change your formula.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And before then, you just have to ship it in from the US illegally, smuggle it.
So. I didn't hear this. I've got
We never suggested it.
But the good thing is, though, at least if you do, if anyone manages to be overseas shortly and you try it there, it's that rare occasion where when it comes to Australian shores, it will be the same product. Because how many times over the years have you bought something in the US, skincare especially, and you try and buy it in Australia and you're like, this isn't the same.
Yeah, because it has some amazing ingredient that you can buy it.
But they've omitted.
Yes, over the counter in America, but it's illegal here because it will kill you.
Yeah, TGA is like, that is not happening here. Thanks. Yes.
So what is your current non-beauty fave?
Oh my God.
I feel like it's going to be a plant based on what's in the background.
A plant could definitely be it. I'm trying to do my very best to not buy any more plants until I'm back from visiting the US in the end of March. So I'm like, we have people house sitting and taking care of our pets while I'm out of town. So I'm like, let me not give them 70 plants and be like, you can't kill any of these. Good luck. So
and
definitely,
this one's a baby.
Definitely not a plant. I would say Drag Race is such a huge thing for me. Like I got into it during the pandemic and now I'm watching like every international season all over, and I've got friends that like after we DM about it and we chat and I'm like, who do you think's gonna win? It's just it's a phenomenon now that I'm like sucked into, and I'm like, I get it. I was very apprehensive as first, but
a late adopter.
Yeah, but now I'm into it and full on into it, and we have to make Down Under season 2 better. Like that's all I've got to say, because I'm pretty sure anybody who's listening who watched season 1 was a flop. The queens are amazing, but someone on that other side dropped the ball.
Yeah.
Please go send them all love because they deserve it.
Interesting. I'm one of the rare people that has like previously watched one, two, maybe three seasons like 5 years ago, but didn't get into it. And it's like people either don't watch Drag Race or they've seen every season. And so I would like a recommendation on which seasons. This is like, this is what people ask me for Survivor. Which season should I watch?
Well, I was going to say you, I know you're Team Survivor like through and through. And it's so funny because there's people I listen to podcast-wise about Drag Race who talk about Survivor and Drag Race and how there's so many similarities.
Like, I need to listen in, like, to those podcasts.
And character archetypes. Like they're like, oh, this person is just like this person from Survivor season blank. So yeah.
I can get around that.
Okay, okay, all right.
Yeah. So when you start to think about it that way, it's like, we're not going to put the queens on the island because they need running water. But
God forbid. Yeah, have you got a favorite season? I will watch it. I have annual leave right now.
She's on her honeymoon.
Oh my gosh, yes. So there's some I think that recently were really great. One that if you're okay with subtitles or you speak fluent Spanish, España season one was amazing.
Oh.
And it felt very like authentic to the franchise. So I'd say that's a really great one. But if you're starting on the US, which is like the iconic institution part, I'd say like a season 9 is a classic. Season 9, season 6, season 5. Anybody listening is like, oh yeah, check, check, check. Those are definitely it. But 13 is going on right now and it feels really good.
Still great.
There's my annual leave done. Brenton's going to be like, enough of the drag queens.
You're like, there's literally thousands of them around the world. Yes. I will never be done.
That's great. And we'll have to find out what those Survivor drag queen podcast. Drag Race podcasts are. Yes, please. And to finish us off, the most important question of the episode.
Other than the Canberra one.
Yes. What is your snack of the moment?
Oh, this is such an interesting question because I'm doing my best to not snack right now because I'm like, when I go back to the US, I want to look like I looked before
I left.
You want
to look like a snack.
For a pandemic.
Yeah.
So I want to look like we were only 2 months into the pandemic and I hadn't gained any weight at all, where now I'm like, that's going to be very hard in a month and a half. But good old TV snacks. I have settled into at night having like a cup of tea with like one TV snack or two. And I'm trying to be really good about it, but yeah, the Krispy Kreme collab, some of the flavors are good, some are not good.
Yeah. How did you feel about the vanilla, and have you tried a TikTok biscuit to compare the two?
Yes. Okay, yes. Great. The vanilla is good. I'm trying to think which flavor was bad. I think there was like a cookies and cream one. That one was, no, they're too hard. Some of the flavors are softer than the other ones.
Yeah.
And I'm a true American. Like, I dunk a cookie. I want the cookie in milk traditionally. Not a bickie. It is a cookie. So.
But it's so weird because Americans call everything cookies. Like, they'll even call their, like, dog kibble, like, cookies or biscuit. Like, I'm
that's a biscuit. Dog biscuit, American cookie.
That's
cookie.
A biscuit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's and that's probably confusing. Why I'm very anti-bickie because I'm like, that's a dog biscuit. Yeah. And this isn't a human cookie.
Yeah, that's an important distinction.
Absolutely fair. So you don't do the traditional TV snacks that are like the kind of weird geometric shapes? That's not for you?
You know what? I've had them. They're fine. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to enjoy this Krispy Kreme collab while it's out because it's going to go. It's going to go at some point. And then, I mean, I love a Tim Tam. Who doesn't love a Tim Tam? There's a new flavor out that I just heard about yesterday that I need to try, like triple choc or something.
Oh.
I'm just like, so long as it's not double coat because it's too much chocolate.
Yeah,
interesting. But, I'm a double coat kind of gal, but you do lose two. You lose two in the tray, so it's like it's a.
Do you?
Yeah, I think there's only 11 as opposed to 13 or something.
They're too hard to slam too. You cannot slam a double coat very easy.
That's very true.
I love that you're just like right around the Australian snacks. Yeah,
you've been here long enough. I feel
prior to moving, I think I'd been here 4 or 5 times, so I'd come enough as a tourist. And now that I'm like 2 years in, I'm committed. Like I catch myself saying things to my family on FaceTime and they're like, what did you say? And I'm just like, oh God, this trip back is going to be fun.
Yes. Now, what are you going to take back with you? Like what Australian snacks will you take for your family, if any?
Cadbury chocolate. Chocolate in the US is garbage unless you're getting like premium chocolate. But the fact that we can walk into any Coles, Woolies, any IGA and just grab Cadbury. And I've even been to the Cadbury factory in Tassie when I was down and like that was crazy because it was like total. I don't know if you've seen the show Supermarket Sweep. Where the people are like running and just grabbing all the groceries. That's what I felt like at the Cadbury factory.
How funny. Fun fact, where my partner went to school and I did some classes there because it was like the girl boy version, was next to the Cadbury factory in Melbourne. And it used to smell, it's just up the road from us. And it used to smell like glorious, glorious chocolate. But I've never been to the Tasmanian one. My dad used to work for Cadbury too. So I actually need to do that trip.
Tassie trip.
I don't know if they're doing, they used to do, when I went, it was the first time I went was 2014. They were doing tours still. Yeah. And I think because of COVID, they stopped.
In this world. And yeah.
I did over. The tour and then they were like, and here's the dodgy chocolate section. Help yourself.
Yes.
And
yes.
You got here's to, like, the rejects that Coles wouldn't buy, but you will.
Yes.
The best. Yeah. Okay, so you'll take Cadbury. Any other important snacks?
Cadbury, Tim Tams. Mm-hmm. I have a sister-in-law who loves Quality Street, which I'm like, are you really? Oh. All the food you want, Quality Street?
Okay. And such a secret.
I'm like, isn't that English? Chocolate.
Yeah, and it's very seasonal. Like, thank God you're going around-ish Christmas time because I don't feel like they're always available. Yeah. What about a mint slice? Does any family love a mint slice?
No.
One likes mint slice.
Okay.
No. Sorry, and there's certain Cadbury chocolates. Like, I will not get a favorites because it's going to come with so many things that are very un-American. Like, Cherry Ripe is not a flavor that Americans are approving.
Oh, okay.
I am not a Cherry Ripe person. It is...
Yeah. What about Marvelous Creations? Would that be, like, that well-tolerated or not?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
No one can hate Marvelous Creations.
They can. Yeah. Some people
the
hate
kind with like the Pop Rocks.
Yes.
I have a friend that's obsessed. I have to always bring her like 3 big bars when we go back.
Yes.
Thank goodness they've got the family size chunks.
Yes. Now. And they're so good because the actual pieces are so big. You can be like, I'll just have 2 pieces, but it's the size of your head because the squares
but
are
I
so
But I only
large.
Had 2.
Yeah. You with your TV time. Snacks before bed. Amazing. Oh my God. This is such a fun ep.
It's the first time we've spoken to a real like beauty guru, I suppose.
Yes, like a brand adjacent, like.
Yeah.
Ooh, first international guest, even though you're Australian, but you know.
I mean, we did do this via platform. You can pretend I'm anywhere that you want if it
Absolutely.
Makes you feel better.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We will.
Yes.
And I guess to wrap things up, Josh, this is your moment to plug yourself, talk about you and sell yourself to our listeners in any way that you want to, or use this as a platform to just say anything that you want. So,
oh my goodness. Well, I'm on Instagram. That's probably the only place I'm active. And by active, I mean Instagram stories. Don't go on there expecting a new feed post every day, every week, sometimes every month. It all depends. Josh Collier, MUA, makeup artist. I get people who are like, why do you have the kissy noise at the end of your shirt? Yeah. And I'm just like, it's makeup artist.
Josh Collier, mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's definitely not it. Yeah. And I'd say that's the best place. DM me. I love to chat with people in Australia and just see what's going on because your feedback goes to me and then it goes right back to COSIS HQ. So it is important.
That's great.
Driving what's happening, what you see on your countertop units and on those gondolas at Mecca. So let me know.
Amazing. And also, can you please plug your dog's Insta too? Because if you're into pugs, they're very cute.
Yes. I have 2 very cute pugs. Jeffrey, who's fawn. He's 6. And then Charlie, who is 1, and he's a black pug. He actually has a tiny bit of Frenchie in him, but we don't mention that.
Oh, we don't. No.
No.
A tiny bit of the devil we cannot acknowledge.
All right, it really spikes through him too. So they're the Pugzillas. So like Godzilla, but Pugzilla.
Yep. We'll pop this in the show notes so that people can click right through.
Amazing. We'll have the best trip. When do you leave to go overseas?
March 1st. So I'll be gone for pretty much all of March and I'm thrilled.
So exciting. Amazing. We'll have the best time. And
thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
And for giving us the hot scoop on the new COSIS Revealer Foundation as well.
Which we now have to wait
6 months.
Yes.
No, yeah, great. Great, great, great.
Blue balls. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you again soon. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Josh.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.